Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. Packers-Colts, Sunday afternoon, 3:25 here at Lambeau, Wes. And as the Packers returned to the practice field on Wednesday, we saw a little bit of shifting around with regards to the injury report or the health report. Dimitri Goodson, cornerback, who's been starting the last couple of ball games, is now in the concussion protocol. But Quentin Rollins, who has missed the last three games with a groin injury, was back at practice on a limited basis. We also saw Ty Montgomery, Randall Cobb, and Clay Matthews, all of whom missed the Atlanta game, were back on the practice field in a limited capacity. So some shifting around in terms of the health situation here.
Yeah, definitely. And starting with the cornerback situation, I mean, now obviously that's not what you want to see with Goodson, especially since, you know, he had talked to the media on Monday and on Sunday. So evidently this is something that must have, you know, kind of been diagnosed here in the last few days. But from Rollins' perspective, I thought this was really important for him to be back out there, not only for this defense, but just for him and showing that, you know, we never really got to see exactly what happened. Groin injury flared up during one of the Saturday practices. So being able to get him back out on the field, we'll see what he does this week and how it progresses. But I mean, that's a big guy for them. I mean, the thing about Rollins is he's a lot like Micah Hyde in a way of that you can use him in so many different ways. I think he plays inside, outside, both really well. So we'll see exactly how that plays out with him. The rest of them, Montgomery, Cobb, Matthews, we'll kind of have to wait and see. But Mike McCarthy did also mention, you know, Corey Linsley being back as a full participant.
Yep.
You know, as he works his way back from his own hamstring injury, and it's, you know, that's really going to be key now for the Packers when, you know, it looks like J.C. Treader, you know, could potentially miss some time.
Yeah, Treader was not at practice Wednesday. Looked like, when you look at the film of the end of the game in Atlanta, that didn't look good. What happened to Treader's knee there? So you hope that J.C. won't have to miss too much time. But funny how this game works when you look at the Packers center position. 2.5 years ago, Treader is the starter all through training camp.
Right.
And right towards the end of camp, he gets injured. Linsley steps in. He's in there for 2 years. And then this past offseason, Linsley has the hamstring injury. He re-aggravates it right before training camp, has to go on physically unable to perform. So then Treader steps in. And now here we are back to Linsley stepping in for Treader. The Packers still have to put, at the time we're taping this, they still have to put Linsley on the active roster, officially bring him off of PUP, but the roster is at 52. There is a spot available for him, and it looks like he'll be back in his starting center spot on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, this is something you feel good for Corey Linsley. It's been a tough road back for him. As he said, you know, he hasn't even really practiced up until these last 2 weeks.
Right.
I mean, this injury first happened to him during the offseason program. He aggravated it again in July leading up to training camp. So it's been kind of a touch and go sort of situation for him, and, you know, mentally trying to overcome that and get back to playing with confidence and playing with, being sure that you can go 100%, you know. And
yeah,
for Treader's perspective, I thought he's played a really, really good ball game these last 7 weeks, considering, you know, he's really always been on the cusp there of being a starter. We saw him fill in last year in Washington at left tackle. He's played basically every position you can think of on the offensive line, and he's really smart, and he fits in really well to that center position. It's such an embarrassment of riches in a way for the Packers at center. I mean, they went so many years, Mike, you saw it. I mean, with Evan Smith, and, you know, they signed Jeff Saturday, and, you know, Scott Wells left, and they just were trying to find the right guy to get on a run with Aaron Rodgers. And after so long looking for one, they really found two.
Yeah.
So it's a blessing and a curse in that you can't start both at center. But fortunately for the Packers, if Treader is not able to play on Sunday, they have a lot of confidence with Corey Linsley, who also has a lot of reps at that position.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Rollins, excuse me, potentially coming back on the defensive side. And if Clay Matthews is able to get back on defense, we talked earlier this week about the problems with the Colts on the offensive line protecting Andrew Luck. You get Clay Matthews back as a pass rusher for this game, and I think everything defensively really starts to look different. I just you know, my personal opinion, I think Clay Matthews is the biggest difference maker that this team has on the defensive side of the ball. And the unit, as the entire unit, just never looks the same without him on the field.
No, I think back to 2013, you know, when he broke the thumb not once but twice. But specifically during that first trip, I mean, they were able to get through. You know, Nick Perry stepped up. They had different guys contributing. Julius Peppers led him with sacks that season. So they were able to get a really solid core developed. But yet, it just didn't have the same presence as when you have Matthews on the field. It's because, as we talked about earlier this week, the multitude of ways that Dom Capers can use him and how he really fits into that defense, that's the biggest X factor in Clay Matthews' game. There's just so many different ways you can utilize him. And if he's able to get back this weekend, I mean, whatever the case may be, you just want to make sure that that hamstring is ready to go. Because as we've talked about before, Mike, I mean, these are 8 more games, 9 more games they have to go.
Yep.
It's a long season, and you really want to make sure you have Clay Matthews out there for the long haul.
Yeah, for sure. We'll be keeping an eye on the medical report as the week goes along. But for now, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, shifting gears back to the offensive side of the ball, we've heard comments this week from both Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers about how, from a game plan schematic standpoint, the Packers have been forced to get a little creative here the last few weeks offensively. And we don't really know at this stage the status of Ty Montgomery and Randall Cobb for this week. Are they going to get back on the field? Are they going to miss their second straight game? But it seems as though the Packers are getting used to adjusting on the fly and making do with what they have. And Aaron Rodgers, you know, just says, hey, that's the NFL, and we're going to roll with it.
Yeah, he did. And it was a really insightful conversation I thought Aaron had with the media on Wednesday, sort of, you know, letting you into his psyche a little bit and how he approaches this whole thing. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, the biggest takeaway I had, and he talked about it too during at the early part of his interview, was that, I mean, you look at their injury report from last week, that's a pretty good football team that they were missing there. And the process of having to replace them, and I mean, you look at Eddie Lacy and James Starks and how they're having to go about doing that. I liken it, you're a Moneyball guy, right?
Yeah.
Remember Moneyball?
Sure.
It reminds me of how the A's had to replace Jason Giambi. It wasn't just with one guy, it was with three guys.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what they've had to do with the backfield situation. You're using Ty Montgomery, you're using Randall Cobb. They had to go towards, you know, Devontae Adams on Sunday. And in using, you know, Don Jackson and some of these other pieces, there's a lot of guys playing significant snaps for these Packers right now that I don't think you would have anticipated at the beginning of the season. And that's something that they feel, as messed up as the situation is and not being able to have those guys, there is something to be said for being able to overcome that and mentally, you know, still thriving.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too. You pointed out in the Insider Inbox column this week, Aaron Ripkowski, the fullback from Oklahoma, he had 6 carries his entire college career.
All his senior year.
Yeah, and he ends up with 6 in one game in Atlanta because circumstances and whatever else, you know, lent itself to that. And the fact that when they tried a couple of shotgun draws with Ripkowski, it was working. He was moving the pile and getting some yards. And so you almost discover some things, not to say you're going to make a living with Aaron Ripkowski carrying the ball 15 or 20 times.
Right.
But through this process, you discover some things that you can keep in your back pocket that can be part of your playbook going forward that maybe you didn't realize would be as effective as they could be in certain situations.
Well, 2 things about that. One, to a man, everybody I asked in the locker room was kind of surprised a little bit at how good of a runner Ripkowski is. Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, McCarthy's discussed it. He was brought in here because he's a big, powerful guy, and they feel it could be a good blocking, you know, running back for
right.
them. But as Jordy said, and it was such a good point by him, it's important for them to be able to pull off those draws, especially right now, because when he's in the backfield with Rodgers, you don't want that to be a tell to the defense that, well, yeah, he's just there to be a personal protector and that's
it. Right.
Pass protection, that's his role. No, they're willing to give him the ball, and as you said, he's really difficult to take down. And that offensive line, the way they've been pushing those piles this year, that's a perfect little marriage there that they have going. Yeah. So it's just another part of the piece of the puzzle. And without Eddie Lacy, and when you're missing Randall Cobb and Ty Montgomery, you have to adapt your offense. And I think that's the one thing the Packers have really embraced through this process is using the personnel that they have in a different way, but still finding ways to have success.
Yeah, for sure. And when you talk about those shotgun draw plays as well, when you're not consistently feeding a traditional ground game, you need to do something to keep the pass rushers at least thinking about the possibility of a run. And the way to do that is to run a draw play once in a while, even if it only gains 2 or 3 yards. It doesn't necessarily have to go for 10 or 12. But that's going to help out your offensive line and the pass protection, because the rushers at least have to look and see if that draw play is coming and if they have to react to the run, even if it's not a traditional run.
Definitely. The other thing I want to touch on, too, and you for the first one to bring this up, I think when we were watching the game 2 weeks ago, a lot of people were asking in our insider inbox this week, what's up with all the short passes?
Yeah.
Particularly on early down situations. Well, that's another aspect of what you need to do to adapt your offense. You're not going to have Eddie Lacy getting you 4 or 5 yards on that first carry anymore. You might be able to do that with Don Jackson, but you're not going to have that presence of Lacy. So what do? You run some quick, you know, some stop routes. You run some fades into the flat. You do different things to sort of manufacture those yards. And there's so many times I remember you saying to me, that's not a bad play. That's a good play.
Yeah.
Because a 4-yard pass or a 5-yard pass is the same as a 4-yard run or a 5-yard run on first down.
Yeah, if you hand it off to Eddie Lacy and he busts through there and gets 5 yards and it's 2nd and 5, you're feeling pretty good about where you are. So it's all about the situation. It's all about the down and distance. And if you get that 5 yards on first down by throwing a quick pass out to the out in the flat or a quick slant or whatever it might be, even if it's not going to bust into a big play, the bottom line is, where are you in down and distance?
Right.
And then how do you get the defense to react to what you're doing as you're trying to move the chains? And that's where this whole creativity comes in. The Packers are finding things that are working that maybe they didn't necessarily think would work. They're also trying some things that don't work very well, and then you kind of scrap it for
right.
a while, or then you see maybe if it works against another opponent. But this is all an evolving process, not one that the Packers were necessarily wanting to put themselves into. We saw in training camp the type of offense that Mike McCarthy wanted to have, but invention is the mother of necessity. Is that the line?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really where Green Bay is right now.
Well, and then there's one more point to make on that too, Mike. You've mentioned this before in the past. 2010, the Packers' game plan going into the season was they were going to feed JerMichael Finley. That was going to be the focal point of this offense. Now, I'm not sure if that's exactly what they were planning to do with Jared Cook this year, but they had to basically rewrite the whole playbook. They had to stop and reassess things. That's part of the NFL. That's what life is like in the NFL. And as Rogers said, too, you can make an argument that the passing game's been a lot more efficient in the last few weeks with the adaptation they've had to make. So that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, try to keep the defense reacting and keep them off guard and see what happens.
Yeah.
So with that, we'll throw it to another break, and we'll be back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, we look at the Indianapolis Colts, an opponent the Packers play only once every 4 years, coming from the AFC. And it's interesting that you look at some of the headlines coming out of Indianapolis. There aren't usually a whole lot of things you can draw between two teams when they only meet once every 4 years.
Yeah.
But there's some parallels, I guess. Maybe that's not the right word. But with regards to the 2012 game and now, the Colts are kind of at a crossroads of their season. They're 3-5. They were, I think, for the most part, expected, somewhat favored to win the AFC South, and they're in danger of falling a little bit too far behind in that race. In 2012, when the Packers were coming to Indianapolis, their head coach, Chuck Pagano, had just been diagnosed with leukemia, and you know, the team was in sort of this, rally mode, wanted to win for their head coach, and Bruce Arians was taking over on the sideline. Now, very different situations, obviously, but it is interesting that in sort of these crossroads situations here, the Green Bay Packers once again are the opponent for the Indianapolis Colts when they're in a pretty tough spot.
Yeah, they are. And that was, as you mentioned, in 2012, that's kind of where the whole hype train started for Bruce Arians and how he pulled that team together, you know, despite losing Pagano. And then that emotional uptick that they had at the end of the season when Pagano actually comes back.
Right.
That was a big year for them. I think that you go back and it was the rebuilding stage and you move away from Peyton, you go to Andrew Luck. There was just so many different things going on during that 2012 campaign. Now you're on the flip side of it. Last year, there were the rumors that, okay, is Pagano going to be back? Are they going to do something different?
Right.
What ends up, you know, he ends up signing an extension with the team, and, you know, they kind of pulled together again at the end of last season. I mean, this I like Pagano a lot. I mean, we were on the conference call with him earlier this week, and you can just tell he's the kind of guy, his personality and just how he expresses himself, that he's a dude you want to play for.
Yeah, for sure.
But at the same time, as he said, you're 3-5. He's like, we're at an important time in our season. Trying to stay in that AFC South race. So, yeah, there's a lot of things on the line in this game. I think it's important for both teams for different reasons. You have the Colts that want to stay in this thing and the Packers who want to now stake a claim to the top of the NFC North. So certainly from that perspective, you can definitely see why there's that kind of common bond and thread between those two seasons.
Yeah, for sure. And from the Packers' perspective right now, we talked about it earlier this week too, having lost a home game already to the Dallas Cowboys, you certainly don't want to drop any more home games. But I think the importance of this one, you know, gets heightened even a little bit more from the standpoint of you're heading on the road for three straight games.
Yeah.
After this, you're not going to have another game at Lambeau Field now until December when the Houston Texans come to town. This is a game with the Packers at 4-3. This is a game the Packers flat out have to win.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one of those things, too. You go back to that 2012 season, that also was at an important time of the season for them in terms of how they kind of wanted to go and the direction that they were heading. Now, they were able, you know, despite losing, they were able to kind of get on a run after that. But Aaron Rodgers discussed it last week. I mean, this is a time that they feel that they have to come together. And when you have three consecutive road games coming up like they do, you need to make sure that you get this one back at Lambeau Field and be able to take advantage of that. So there's a lot of things going on there, and I think it's going to be one of the more interesting battles to kind of see unfold because it is an uncommon opponent. We really still haven't seen much of, you know, that AFC South yet. So what exactly do they bring to the table, and is this a team that could you know, really be able to come into Lambeau and push the tempo?
Yeah, for sure. Well, sort of a rare quarterback matchup, Andrew Luck against Aaron Rodgers. We don't see it too often. It should be a pretty good treat on Sunday afternoon. Before we go to a break, though, we'll take care of some sponsor business. Wes, picture this. You and a friend are sitting VIP in plush leather recliners watching the Packers on the 50-yard line at Lambeau Field. Nice picture, isn't it? Well, if you enter Cousin Sub's Best Seats in the House promotion, you and a guest could win a chance to kick back on the 50-yard line in style. Two pairs of lucky Packers fans will be chosen prior to each home game for this VIP experience. Enter daily now through December 12th by completing the entry form and submitting. For complete rules and eligibility, go to packers.com/best seats. Cousin Subs, we believe in better. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spoffer joined by Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, I know this is a Packers show, and I know this is a football show, but we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Game 7 of the World Series. The Cubs break the 108-year championship drought with one of the most dramatic Game 7s you'll ever see. I'm still trying to decide between this one and 1991 Twins and Braves, the 0-0 into extra innings, Jack Morris against John Smoltz. I was in college at that time. That was a Game 7 for the ages, but at Progressive Field in Cleveland on Wednesday night, that was really something.
It was. I was working on our insider inbox while I was watching it in the background, and certainly I was able to get home just in time for the Raji Davis home run to tie it up. And you're thinking in the back of your mind, wow, I mean, this could go against them again, you know, just like it has so many other times. But they rallied together. I mean, a really talented team. I mean, that's what really stood out the most to me. I haven't followed baseball much these past few years, but seeing what Theo Epstein has built, if they would have lost this, I mean, who knows, you know, mentally there's things to overcome, but they were going to be in contention no matter what now for the next 4 or 5 years. They're young and they're really deep.
Yeah, and I think you could almost say the same for Cleveland. I mean, this World Series matchup is one that we could see again sometime. I think from a fate standpoint, you just have to wonder if the baseball gods were finally on the Cubs side, because everything was going against them. They'd blown a 5-1 lead, they blew a 6-3 lead in the eighth inning, and then with all the momentum on Cleveland's side, the rain came for 17 minutes, I believe it was, just enough time for the Cubs to go into the clubhouse. They talked about all gathering together in the weight room, actually brought the team together and kind of regrouped, and then went back out there when the tarp was pulled off and scored 2 runs and hung on and won and got the championship. And maybe that that little reprieve, the unexpected timeout, was just what they needed.
Yeah, I wonder if Charles Woodson was down there with like the one speech, trying to get the troops rallied. It was an interesting way for things to go about. And I mean, I respect the umpires' decisions to do that. Like they said, I mean, if it would have started downpouring, you don't want that affecting the World Series.
Although, for sure.
You also don't know how much that affected Shaw, but the pitcher that was in at the time for the Cleveland. But be that as it may, I know a really important day for a lot of Cubs fans out there. My grandfather was a massive Cubs fan for a number of years. Him and I battled back and forth because I was a big Brewer fan as a kid. But I'm sure he's smiling down, as a lot of people are. I mean, that's probably the coolest thing that came out of this, is so many people reflecting upon their grandparents and, you know, parents who weren't able to enjoy it.
Yeah.
The curse finally being broken.
Yeah, so many generations of fans went their entire lifetime without seeing the Cubs win a World Series, not even seeing them make it to a World Series, with not having been there since 1945. And now the Cleveland Indians will still be trying for their first one since 1948.
Theo Epstein's in the Hall of Fame now, right? I mean, this cements it.
So.
He broke the curse in Boston and Chicago. I don't know what, unless he like helps the Brewers win a World Series. Yeah. I don't know what else you could possibly do to fill out that resume. That's incredible.
Yeah, I hear you. It is. It's really something what that guy has done. What his resume has now.
43 years old.
Okay.
Crazy.
Well, thanks for indulging us, everyone. I know it's a football show, but we had to hit on some baseball. We'll wrap it up there on Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the Team account. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.